Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Ocean Lovers podcast. We are back for another episode. I know we missed last week. I wasn't feeling the greatest and our schedules were just so hectic last week. So
very, very busy.
Yes.
Also, hi. I'm here.
I'm not by myself. Katie's here again. So yeah, we're excited about this episode. Happy Sea Otter Awareness Week. We wanted to make an episode for Sea Otter Awareness Week. We're excited.
They used to be my favorite animals when I was a little girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Since changed, but they're still up there. They're still pretty cute.
Yes. It's funny. I still get comments about the deep dive I did with Erica Page. When it's brought up every so often, people are like, I had no idea about sea otters until I listened to your deep dive.
That's crazy to me.
I'm like, it's pretty gnarly of the things they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty crazy. But yeah, so this isn't going to be like a deep dive, I would say. I know that I'll be covering the southern sea otters, which we pretty much covered in the deep dive. So I'm not really going to like go into detail like before. But Katie is going to be covering the northern sea otters more specifically. So I'm excited to hear everything she has written down for those. And I watched this webinar not too long ago and tried to watch it a little bit again today. And it was pretty cool. So I don't really have too much notes on it, but I just thought it'd be cool to share some things and share experiences with the sea otters, and maybe, you know, since it is Sea Otter Awareness Week, we can just talk about what we can do better to help protect them. So I guess before we get started, is there any updates with you for the past week with work, anything like that?
Not really.
No. Nothing exciting.
Oh, wait. Yes. So I am moving on after my internship, which I think I mentioned last time. But my internship is ending October 5th, and I should be moving on to an aquarist position.
Yay. So cool.
So I'll still be at the same zoo, but I'll be working with water quality and little fishies.
That'd be cool. Do they do a lot of research in that department, or do you not know yet?
Really. Sure they do. I did a shadow day on Monday this week, just to see like what that part of the department kind of does and everything. It's mainly just like running around the entire zoo, making sure every exhibit that has water is tested and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool.
Especially now with the colder weather coming, we have to start prepping for like winterizing things and all that stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm curious to see what you start learning and what you can share on the podcast. And that's cool.
What about you, other than being sick?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Other than being sick and losing half my hearing right now, definitely better. My voice is still like kind of gone. I'll try to mute so I'm not constantly coughing in everyone's ear. It's just like a dry cough. So it's like if I'm breathing too heavy or too much, then it like flares up. But other than being sick, I've just been busy with work. Busy with work and doing the starting an internship with the Harbor Wild Watch. I believe
you did it.
Yeah. So I like kind of started that. What we're doing is we're just picking like an ocean critter from the Salish Sea. So I am picking that and I'm basically just writing like kind of my own little article about it.
Fun. That's awesome though.
Yeah. So I started that. So that's really exciting. All right. So let's get started. We did get a couple questions from people. We posted it on our Instagram. So we'll just kind of answer that. It's only a couple of them. We'll kind of just, I guess, throw them in there as we go. So if you want, Katie, you can start talking about the northern sea otters and then we'll just go from there.
Yeah, for sure. So as Chrissy was saying, there's two subspecies of sea otters. There's the northern and the southern. And then the northern, they live in waters off of south coastal Alaska, into British Columbia and the state of Washington. And Alaska is like the primary populations of them. And they have three different stocks. So there's the southwest, the southeast, and the south central. So southwest is currently listed as threatened, and then the south central and southeast are not listed as threatened right now. They're all obviously protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And I think that was ever since that was like enacted, like in the 70s, I believe. Yeah, they've been protected.
Yeah, I think it's like
77. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just, you know, increase in predation from killer whales. That's a big one for population declines. Mm. And like I said, that's all with the southwest stock of them. And then, you know, competition with shellfish fisheries. So they're, you know, obviously trying to hunt for things like urchins and sea cucumbers and crabs and clams. And when the shellfish fisheries are wiping all that out, they're kind of limited on their food. So that's leading to some declines there. And then back in 1989, there was an oil spill within Prince William Sound. And that's when the South Central and the Southeast, that's when the Southwest started to decline deeply. And so the South Central and Southeast, gosh, these are like tongue twisters here. Their stocks are increasing ever since that point. But yeah, so I just wanted to talk briefly about why oil spills are so bad for sea otters. Because they affect sea otters a lot more than any other marine mammal. That's pretty much because they have a really specific grooming style, grooming needs. So if a sea otter's fur becomes dirty, it has trouble absorbing that air that it needs to keep it warm. So they're constantly grooming themselves all day. Whenever they're not eating or sleeping, they're like cleaning themselves in whatever way they can. So oil spills lead to death through hypothermia, which is really insane. And then, yeah, they feed on over 100 different prey species. Oh, and wow. They eat approximately 25% of their body weight in food each day. And that's just because they don't have blubber like most marine mammals have. They just have really dense fur.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have some fun facts. I don't know if you want me to get into that right now.
Yeah. Let's, before you go into that, one of the questions we got is, what is the difference between the southern and northern otters?
Ooh, yeah. So overall, northern sea otters are bigger. So the southerns, they get up to about 4 feet, 70 pounds, whereas the northerns, they get up to 100 pounds. So a big, I guess not a big difference, but pretty substantial. So yeah, they are larger and they have denser fur, and they have larger and more powerful jaws. And the southerns have smaller teeth and kind of like a longer rostrum, which is their snout area.
Yeah. Which it makes sense because they are in way colder weather and waters than they are here in the southern area.
Gotta bulk up.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So what are the fun facts that you have?
Oh, right. So these are more like general sea otter fun facts, because there's not too many differences between the two because they are the same animal.
Yeah, they are very similar.
Yeah.
Just different regions.
Yeah, and I don't know if any of this is going to be repetitive from the deep dive, but these are just things that I found very interesting. So something that I love that's very different from most animals in general, not even just marine mammals, but they can have pups any time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have a distinct breeding or pupping season. And then their pups can't dive underwater until they grow their adult fur. Because it's just too dense.
Yes. I was looking at that too, and I'm like, oh, it was saying like even if they try, what's it called? Even if they try, you'll see like their butts in the air because they can't go. Yep.
Yeah, they just stay afloat, which so like
cute.
It's really helpful for moms because when they have to go dive and get food for their babies. Yep. They just kind of stay there and they float. But as I was saying, the sea otter fur is the densest of any mammal, not even just marine mammal, any mammal. They have 1 million hairs per square inch. And just for reference, we have about 100,000 hairs on our entire head. So really thick.
When you think about it like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Their lifespan is about 15 to 20 years in the wild. Obviously, captive animals have the potential to live longer. But yeah, 15 to 20. I think that's a decent age.
Yeah.
Age range. So a group of them is called a raft. And they're not highly migratory, but rafts can be comprised of as few as 10 individuals to as many as 1,000. And they're typically all single sex rafts. So you won't really see females and males combined unless, you know, it's a pup, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, as I said before, the only marine mammal without blubber because they have that dense fur. And this one I liked. They can live their entire life without leaving the water.
Really?
Yeah, they can stay in the water. Oh. All 20 years.
Oh, wow. Huh. Okay.
That
actually leads into something different for the southern ones. So that'll be interesting to touch up on.
All right.
Yeah.
I only have a few more here. And then we can get into your southern stuff.
Cool.
But this I didn't realize. They're one of few mammal species on the entire earth that uses a tool to help it hunt or feed. So I obviously knew like they use rocks and stuff, but I didn't realize that like not really any other animal does that. Huh. Which like when you really think about it, you're like, yeah, I mean, a lion wouldn't use a rock. So
right?
It makes sense. But it's when you like hear it in that kind of
it's not like a fact that you really think about until it's kind of right there in front of you. You're like, oh wait, yeah, that's true, huh?
Yeah. They're the only marine mammal capable of flipping over boulders on the seafloor, which is really funny to think of. Just a little sea otter like pushing a rock under the water. And then so finally, they're the only mammal to catch prey with their paws instead of their mouth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Again, another one you wouldn't think about.
Until you start really thinking about it.
Yes.
Yeah, because like, I don't know. Everything.
So cute. Yeah. So for the southern sea otters, again, I didn't like take too many notes on it because a lot of people can go back to the deep dive and kind of listen to that for like more in depth, like, you know, sizes. And like Kitty mentioned, the southern sea otters are a lot smaller. Oh, not a lot smaller, but they are smaller than the northern sea otters. And you can find them in Carmel. Let me see. I have a little bit written down. I've talked about the sea otters a lot just because they're in this area that I am in, and I've seen them only like in Moss Landing, Carmel, Monterey Bay is like the most famous spot.
I'm so jealous.
Oh, you should.
Me, I'm living on the East Coast, not seeing any otters.
Really? Have you seen one like out there yet or no?
No, I've literally never seen an otter except in an aquarium.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Now it's like, see, and it's weird to hear that because anytime I go out on the boat or anytime I'm out in that area, I see them all the time.
Yeah.
There's one.
Never seen a sea otter, never seen a sea lion. Obviously, like I work with them, but like in the wild.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Speaking of sea lions. Oh, okay. I tend to do this a lot and I get so sidetracked. But isn't it so crazy? We're going to take a second to talk about this because I don't think we talked about this on the podcast yet.
Okay.
About the sea lions that were in Monterey Bay that I sent you videos of.
Oh, Like,
so they, crazy.
They really like push their limits coming up those stairs.
Yeah. So that's actually for those that don't know what we're talking about. I posted videos on the Ocean Lovers podcast Instagram stories, and I got quite a few messages. Like, people were pretty shocked to see it. And I made it known to like tell people like, this is not common. They haven't done this. At least I don't know when's the last time they've done it. I was reading comments under the post that they were posted. It's like a Pacific Grove Facebook page that I'm part of. And some people were saying like the last time they did this was in like the 1991 or something like that.
Wow.
So that's the year I was born. So that was so that was 30, almost 31 years ago. So it is very weird. So for those that don't know, you know, you guys hear me talk about Monterey all the time, but there's this breakwater, and usually the sea lions hang out in this breakwater section, and you can hear them all the way from the wharf, all the way from the trails. And that's just kind of their spot. So when you go out on the whale watching boats, even you can see them from the docks, they're covering this breakwater area. And when they're not there, there's also like this fishery that's on the other side of the wharf, and they'll hang out underneath the dock under there. Those are kind of their go-to spots. And of course, there's other areas in Monterey, like coves and stuff, that they hang out. But then there's this, we have a really long trail down the Fisherman's Wharf all the way down to Cannery Row, where the Monterey Bay Aquarium is. I'm not sure how long it is, but you go all the way down, or actually towards the beginning where the wharf is. No joke, there's probably, oh my God, I want to say probably thousands of these sea lions. And they're just everywhere. They're coming up the steps. So in a 2-day span, they had to like put these barricades up, because this is typically this trail, and like this little beach that they were at is typically, they don't go there. And people were just like, it had to be barricaded because they were going up the steps to the actual trail. So those are the videos I posted. Well, a little update. Before you go into Fisherman's Wharf, there's also another cove, a tiny little cove. I even have a picture of that cove too. I'll send you a picture of it, mm-hmm. and I'll circle it of like where they are. But now they're there. So they like relocated. I don't know if they're all still in the other spot, but now they're covering this section right before the wharf, and they're like on the rocks, pretty much like where people are walking. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, nobody knows why. Like, I want to talk to someone that's like, maybe I'm hoping somebody's doing some studies on this.
Yeah.
I would love to talk to anybody that's listening. If you're doing a study on this, please let me know, because I would love to talk to you.
Taking over.
Yes. They're taking over. And I'm like, I would love to see what somebody has to say about it, but mm-hmm. we don't know. It could be the water change. It could be, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I know like the sea lions at, it's not the same, but the sea lions at the zoo are very sensitive to like our water temperatures and stuff. So that's like a thing we have to deal with every single day. So maybe it's pushing them out.
Could be that the food, or I don't know. This weather also, change is being really weird. So maybe they just feel that before we even know it's coming, you know, animals are very, you know, they can sense those things. So who knows? I just think it's so interesting that to see that these sea lions, I know we're not talking about sea lions, but I think we wanted to like bring it up on the podcast, like as like a little update before. And I totally forgot until right now, but
yeah,
so interesting
it is.
But yeah, so I don't know what made me think of that, but
how I haven't seen them in the wild, and I haven't seen sea otters in the wild either.
Okay. So yeah, the sea otters hang around in Carmel, Morro Bay, they're seen in Santa Barbara, obviously Monterey Bay because of our kelp forests. It's a their like main habitat over here. Moss Landing, there is and Elkhorn Slough is a big one out by Moss Landing too. And there's actually, I would have to get the website up because I don't want to like say the wrong name. So I'll look it up hopefully during this episode. But it's basically these researchers and volunteers go out in the Elkhorn Slough around Moss Landing. And they actually do a lot of research with the water. And on their website, every... they have a device, I guess, out there. And this is just me briefly looking at their website before, you know, recording this episode. But I guess they do a lot of research, not only with the sea otters, but just the water quality in that area too. And it's really interesting. It like updates like every 30 minutes and you can see all the charts and everything on the website. I don't know how often it uploads, but I would think it's probably pretty frequent since they're getting that data every 30 minutes, I believe. Mm-hmm. But I'll definitely try to list, I'll make a little note to like list these websites so everybody can see that on the Patreon page. But yeah, so the Elkhorn Slough, we have researchers out there that document their behavior, their breedings, how many pups they see throughout the year. And like Katie said, they can have them any time of the year. So there's not really like a set time where they're going out. But I did watch a webinar on top of all that. I did watch this webinar and it's on YouTube. It's called, all you have to do is type in Southern Sea Otter Basics, Fact versus Fiction. And basically, let me get her name. It's Heather E. Barrett, I believe. Heather E. Barrett. She is the science communication director and research scientist. And she has like, I think it's like a 3-part series. I did the fact and fiction, and there was another one after that I kind of watched, Understanding Sea Otter Disturbance. So, you know, obviously we're doing this episode to talk about Sea Otter Awareness Week. So obviously, you know, we want to talk about that. But there was like just kind of random stuff that I wanted to talk about instead of like going in detail about, you know, little specifics that we did in the deep dive. But like Katie said, oil spills is a big factor in the decrease in numbers. They are considered threatened. The southern ones are considered threatened under the endangered species. So their numbers, although they seem to be increasing, they're still not quite to obviously where they would want them. Sometimes when you go out there, it doesn't look like they're threatened in any way because there's so many. I'll have to show everyone of the pictures that I have. And I want to say, oh gosh, I don't know if I was pregnant with Avery or if it was before, but I remember Christian and I went out to Monterey Bay and we were at the Asilomar Beach, which is like against the Monterey Bay and like Pacific Grove area. And I remember looking out and just seeing all these little things floating, and the water was pretty rocky. So I was like, I couldn't really tell what they were. And I'm like, oh my gosh, those are all sea otters. So yeah. I have like video and I have pictures of it, but you can't really tell. Uh-huh. And I remember like texting Erica Worth, and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many out here. And she's like, yeah. She's like, it's kind of weird that they're all like congregated out in that one section right there. But you could tell they were all just kind of hanging on to the kelp, and because the water was pretty rough. But it was so weird to see, like, it looked like hundreds of them were just like out there. It was so weird.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, oil spills, because of their fur, their super dense fur, their skin is really, it's like never touching the water. So that's why they constantly have to groom. They're constantly grooming themselves because they're fluffing up their fur to the point where their skin does not touch the water. Because if it does, like if they get an injury or anything like that, it could be very serious for them because they can get, I can't think of the word. You said the word,
Hypothermia.
So they can get that like really easily if they were to get injured in any way, because their skin does not touch the water. So oil spills, you know, obviously if they're constantly grooming themselves, that's like a really big thing. That's just really negative impact on the species. Something else that I knew before, but Heather kind of went more in depth with it in this webinar, is females can get these scars on their nose. So I don't know if it's the same with the northern ones with their mating habits. But these females get scars because the males grab onto them during mating, you know, while they're mating. And they tend to get these like really gnarly scars. Now, I guess some females don't get them at all. Some males don't do that. Some get them really bad. I've seen females to where like half their nose looks like it's gone.
Oh my gosh.
And it's, yeah, it's pretty intense, especially when it's like freshly wounded.
Yeah.
And it's like so red and bleeding and oh, it looks so painful.
It's crazy how many animals do that kind of thing. Yeah. Like they either grab on with their mouth or it's like, and I don't know if it's like obviously an aggression thing, but mm-hmm. like to us, it looks, you know,
yeah.
gnarly. Yeah. But like that's so crazy to think yeah. like they just latch on like that.
Yeah. And it's weird because I always, when I go out like on the dock or something, and if I ever see that, I'm like, oh, that's a female. Well, something interesting that Heather mentioned in this webinar is that males also have them. Huh. So when they're doing research, she did some research out of Moss Landing. This video is 2 years old on YouTube. So I'm just going to assume that she's still relative in the area and is continuing research. But this was 2 years ago. So as of 2 years ago, she was saying that while they conduct this research and take their photos, they cannot state in their research that it's a female by the scars on their nose. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting because I started kind of identifying them that way because of it. And she was saying that, again, like I said, some males just don't do it to females. There's females that will have like perfectly fine noses, not really touched, maybe a little scarring, but not drastic. But I guess males can have it too, because I guess males just, they can be aggressive towards each other, which is normal for probably any male, you know, species or any species yeah. for that matter. But I guess I want to say she said something about like them practicing. So I think them not like practicing, obviously the mating with the males, but I think it's like them practicing like more dominance. Mm-hmm. And so they get like, I don't know, prepped for it. I don't know the right term to try yeah. to keep it PG. but yeah, apparently males can have it too. So I just thought it was interesting that during this research, they can't like just identify them by male or female just because mm-hmm. of their noses. So I thought that was interesting.
That's similar to, so when I was working at the Stranding Center, if we ever got like a phone call or a picture of a seal, but like say it was already dead and like we didn't go out to pick it up and whatever, we couldn't sex the animal. Mm-hmm. Like I always thought like, oh, well, males are a different coloration than the females for gray seals anyway.
Oh, okay.
So whenever I would look at a picture, I'd be like, oh, this is a male. Oh, this is a female, whatever. And the other Stranding tech let me know, like, you can't necessarily write that down because there are, you know, okay. the one in a million that yeah. are different, you know? So yeah. you can't always go by things like that. So it's interesting yeah. for sure.
Yeah. Let's see, what else did I wrote a couple little notes. I guess that this picture went viral of like the sea otters holding hands. Yeah. And so now there's like stickers made and coloring oh, yeah. books. And so she brought that up and she said that it's very rare that they actually do that. So most people probably know, especially if you listen to the deep dive, they mainly wrap themselves up in these kelp forests in the kelps that in Monterey Bay, which they're like famous for and well known for. They'll take their teeth, they'll wrap themselves up in it. And that's mainly what they do. They kind of, or they'll just float away, because basically if they were to hold hands, let's say all together in this like raft formation, they're just all going to float away. They have to wrap themselves up in this kelp. So it was funny that she brought that up. I figured I would talk about it, but Yeah, they generally probably a good percentage of the time wrap themselves up in the kelp forests.
Not as cuddly as everyone thinks.
I know, they're not they're not super sweet. I guess I'll answer this question because that'll lead to something. Another question we got, is it true that sea otters can be aggressive? So yes, they can be aggressive. I think with any animal, obviously they can be aggressive. You have to keep your distance. I know with sea lions and sea otters, with the Marine Mammal Protection Act, you have to stay at least 60 feet away, I believe is what it is. Like Katie said, like, we don't know for sure if being aggressive, like with the whole nose thing with mating. But Heather was also saying in the webinar, like, it's because they can't grab onto their fur. They can't grab onto their skin. So they, I guess that's like their way of holding on to them while they mate. But they also have been found, if any kids are listening, brace yourself. I'm gonna try to say this in the nicest way possible, cleanest way possible. But they have been seen and documented to do sexual things with harbor seals, sadly, baby harbor seals, I should say, to the point where I'm pretty sure it's actually caused death between these seals.
That's insane.
I know, isn't it crazy? And they've done necropsies on these harbor seals, and there has in fact been like damage done to them by the sea otters. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I want to say, I would have to go back and look just to make sure, so don't quote me on it, but I want to say in this webinar she said that there was like 3 documented out in Monterey Bay, which I do know someone that I'm pretty sure he has seen it, because it was brought up a while ago. And my other friend and I were talking about it too. And yeah, it's not the best thing. I don't know why they do it.
That's so odd.
It's so weird, but they've done it. And I guess I didn't know this until watching this on YouTube, but one of the males was actually, I think, taken into, I don't know exactly what happened, but I think they took it from the wild. Because they were doing studies on it based off of why, like, they were trying to figure out like why he's doing this to the harbor seals. And she said hopefully with taking that male out that it won't happen again.
Break like, the pattern. Know, because,
yeah, break that pattern. Hopefully he's not like teaching other sea otters the same thing. And I guess when this was documented, it was seen through 2000 to 2002, so I don't think anything has been seen since. So hopefully that's, you know, fingers crossed it stays that way.
I'm curious to know, like, if any other animals, like, do that kind of thing either, like, cross, I don't know, like, I don't even know how to word it. Like
different species altogether.
Yeah, that's so not an animal thing. Weird. It's so odd.
Very rare. Obviously, we just don't have enough documentation of like what would make them do it. Maybe,
and it's odd that it's the pups too.
Yeah, well, like, I think with the sea lions, they just know they're just bigger. I think it's just the males maybe practicing dominance. Maybe that could be a thing. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. Curiosity, maybe a sign of dominance.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. Oh, and something else that was interesting is they had a clip of this infrared light, and it was really cool to see their body temperature in the water with this infrared light. So you can see as this specific sea otter is moving through the water, you see like the heat waves almost that it like leaves behind, like the temperature. And it was really interesting, like, to show that they contain like that much heat in the water. Like it gives like a good indication of like how much heat they're actually producing. And especially like it gives off a little bit in the water as they're swimming, but like you can see through this light. But then on the camera, you can see like they have a lot of the heat near their more of a head area. So their head, their paws, like chest area. And that was like the biggest areas that had them. But it was really interesting to kind of see it, you know, swimming through the water, and you can like see this little trail.
Yeah, that's cool.
And them like how they retain their heat and how fast they lose it too. So that was really cool. And something that she pointed out and made a really good point is that, which you were saying, that sea otters can go their entire lives with living in the water. I'm curious if the southern sea otters is the same, and maybe some just choose not to beach themselves, or maybe they're saying it like it's just a possibility, you know?
Yeah. I think it was more of like a, if they needed to
survive that way,
stay in the water, right, they could.
Yeah,
but I didn't really look in to see if like that's a common thing or yeah. not.
Yeah, so I guess in the Elkhorn Slough area near Moss Landing, where they do a lot of the research on the sea otters, because that's where the most of them are, like they kind of seclude in this area in Moss Landing. So that's why they're doing a lot of research on them in the Elkhorn Slough area, because they tend to gravitate in this area. They are found to on the beaches and more secluded, obviously. And I guess people ask, you know, is it because they're sick or injured? Which, yes, they can be older. They can be like an older sea otter. It can be injured. Like that can be an indication of them being on a beach. But really, I guess, like she mentioned, them being on a beach kind of goes overlooked, because we just always see them in the water. And it is true that a lot of them have actually been seen on beaches before. But because beaches, they, you know, obviously they don't want to be around people, and they're very finicky when it comes to that. So if it's not like a really secluded area, you're really not going to see it. So I guess they had a study on this one specific beach. I don't know. I don't remember the name of it. She mentioned it in the webinar, that at one point in time, this beach was closed off to the public. And then they noticed that these sea otters were hanging out in this specific spot. So that made them to believe that, you know, obviously it's possible for them to just play and relax and to rest in these areas. But because of human activity and a bunch of tourism, especially in Monterey Bay area, mm-hmm. you just don't really see it. You just see them kind of out in the water. So I thought that was really interesting that, yes, they can beach themselves, I guess you can say. They can be found on these little, like, in these coves or in these beaches, but you don't really see it because it's very secluded. They like their privacy when they are, and they're just resting. And yeah, I thought that was, how are they important to the ecosystem? So that is the last question we have. And that's a really good question. Do you want to answer that one? I guess we can both kind of go back and forth. I mean,
you briefly mentioned kelp, and mm-hmm. So sea otters are keystone species, and it's kind of like, you know, when you grow up, you see like the food chain and the mm-hmm. food web or whatever. And so everything has an impact on another thing. So sea otters ultimately help populations of urchins, even though they eat urchins, but because of the way that they live and all the ecosystems that they affect, everything kind of thrives. And then, you know, commercial fisheries come and ruin that. But
yeah. But yeah. And weirdly enough, one of the things she was mentioning in here was sea urchins wasn't like the top five that they eat in this location too.
Yeah, I think it depends on where they live, mm-hmm. because like I mentioned earlier, they like have a variety, like 100 different marine things that they eat, different prey items.
So I'm curious, like in the northern area, if the sea urchins tend to take over, if they eat them more over there. Because I think the southern ones, they don't, it's not as common. I think they have been seen to eat them, but they generally eat like, I think it's abalone, crabs. I've seen them eat crabs. Oh gosh, what else is there? Sea snails.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, God.
The top ones for the northern were similar, like crabs, clams, snails, urchin. So I mean, you know, shellfish, all that stuff.
Well, that's all the stuff I got. I know that was just like a lot of information all once.
Word vomit.
Right? I don't know. I guess I'm like a geek when it comes to like webinars and stuff. I love watching them. So I'll definitely share this with everyone. And I think there's a bunch more. So we'll also post like different links. Katie, if you have any of how, what's it called? How we can help the species, you know, websites that you could like maybe help donate. I know because Monterey Bay, they have like their own programs. So I think I could find a couple of them to pop up. Plus the Elkhorn Slough, the researchers out there, they do quite a bit of work. So you can kind of, you can actually subscribe to get emails from them, which I did a couple days ago, and just kind of get updates on, you know, different stuff that they come up with. Yeah, because it's Sea Otter Awareness Week. We definitely want to bring awareness to these cute, but not so cute. All right, guys. Well, hopefully you learned quite a bit through that episode. We had a lot of fun with giving you all the information. You know, I learned a lot just through doing watching this little webinar from, if you guys want to look her up, her name is Heather E. Barrett. Hopefully, maybe we can even have her on the podcast. That would be interesting.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, maybe I'll try to reach out to her. I'm pretty sure she left her email at the end of the other video I watched. But the second video, I guess I really didn't touch up on, but the second video that is also on there, she went over like human and animal behavior with the interactions and like how that can be really just disturbing to the sea otters. And obviously, you know, I want to bring that up real quick since that's the whole reason why we're doing this episode. Just I guess a takeaway from it is like, just be respectful, obviously, to any wildlife. But sea otters, you know, at least in this area, they are threatened right now. And we want to be respectful, keep your distance, even if you're in kayaks. You know, she was showing videos, or she showed a video of these kayakers. They weren't like, they were getting somewhat close, and it could have been on accident. You know, you really don't know. But you could see like the sea otter started like splashing, and it definitely caused a behavior out of the norm. You know, it obviously felt threatened. She was saying like, when you do communicate with others about these issues that we're having with people getting too close, is just staying positive when you're communicating with people. And that's something that I've always said on the podcast, like the best thing is like good communication. Always something to take away, which we've said on other episodes many, many times, especially the Seaspiracy episode. I want to say we've mentioned it a lot on there. That was a good episode.
But yeah, that was our biggest thing at the Stranding Center, because every time we would have to go respond to an animal, there would be like crowds of people. And it's so, like you said, it's so easy to just like be, I don't want to say aggressive, but assertive in that situation where I was like, let me do my job, back away, please. Like, and a lot of times people are trying to be helpful. They're trying to, you know, get other people to back away, but then in doing so, you're endangering the animal and yourself. And you know, obviously I didn't see sea otters, but it goes for all marine mammals, all marine animals, really, sharks too. Like, just stay away. Oh, they're wild animals.
But yeah, we will keep you guys posted. Hopefully we can get back on a schedule, and you know, with me being sick, and I know you're going through finals and stuff like that, so hopefully we can do that, and we will see you guys next week.
Sounds good.
All right.
Happy Sea Otter Awareness Week.
Yes. We hope you guys learned a lot and spread awareness about all the sea otters. And yeah, have a good week, you guys.
Bye. Bye.